And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I am Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague Stuart Mandel. A lot to get into, especially in the Big Ten. But before we do that, Stu, I know there's a subject that, as we're taping this on the morning after Halloween, Saturday, you seem to be pretty worked up about what you saw from Florida's head coach Dan Mullen this weekend. So let's start there.
Well, I don't know that it's that I'm worked up about it. It's that the public is worked up. There was nothing that happened yesterday that I tweeted about that got more reaction than the fight, the Missouri-Florida fight, and specifically Dan Mullen's role in it. And I just think it's interesting that I don't think Dan Mullen is somebody that college football fans had much of an opinion of one way or the other outside of Florida and Georgia fans. And then in the last few weeks, starting with the wanting to pack the swamp comments, he's kind of like embraced the villain role, and he definitely embraced the villain role last night. You know, when he was running off the field at halftime, egging on the crowd like a perfect, like a WWE wrestler, coming back out for more. And then it was a coincidence. It had nothing to, but the fact that he was in a Darth Vader costume at his press conference for Halloween, just topped it off. So it's one of those things where you're just totally dependent on what the TV broadcast showed. And it may be that there was more that we didn't see outside the camera, but it sure seemed to me that that whole melee began when, after the late hit that didn't get called on Kyle Trask, and the teams are starting to leave the field, Mullen ran out there like a madman, and I assumed to confront the refs, but then when I watched it again, he just seemed like he was yelling at whoever was in his vicinity, and that included some Missouri players. I don't even know if it was included the Missouri player who hit Kyle Trask. And then the next thing you know, it's all hell breaks loose. I mean, when's the last time you saw a fight in a college football game with that many punches thrown? It was, and only three guys got ejected. So I got to think the SEC will be reviewing the tape and taking some follow-up action.
Well, I mean, there's some to unpack here. I'll be perfectly honest here. Because the game was not on, it was on something on SEC Network, but it was a channel I didn't get. So honestly,
SEC Network Alternate.
Yeah, so I did not get to see it. I saw a video of it, and I heard people's description of it. And I actually thought back, you know, Dan Mullen got into it in a game with Derek Mason a couple of years ago, which I remember that video was kind of like Derek Mason went off. It looked like Derek Mason was gonna pummel Dan Mullen at that point. But it was, you know, when we were talking about this a little last night, that was one of the things I thought of. But yeah, I guess it's going to be interesting to see how the SEC handles it, because I know that's not the kind of publicity they want, especially when it's their coaches in the middle of it. And remember, they fined Lane Kiffin this week for something where they basically, in the same press release where they were talking about fining him, they were basically admitting they got the call wrong, and they still fined him. So now how do they, you know, how much do they fine Dan Mullen for this, especially in light of there's a lot of eyeballs that were on this, even though it was on SEC Alternate, and as well as it's leading into the Florida-Georgia game. And I think that's going to make this a very interesting subplot into how they handle it and going forward. And there was a comment that Scott Strickland, the Florida AD, had made a couple of weeks ago. It was in light of basically the pandemic kind of running through the Florida football program. And some of the comments Mullen had made, as you said, about when he was at Texas A&M and trying to like clean them up a little bit in the comments. But it was almost like, you know, Dan calls some good plays, but And there was some moment where you were just like, okay, sometimes he doesn't get the big picture, or maybe it's not always show himself in the best light. And I think that's probably, it sounds like kind of some of the things you're talking about right now.
He basically told him to stay in his lane. You know, Mullen, I mean, I've known him since he was a Florida, the offensive coordinator. Actually, I think I first met him when he was Alex Smith's OC at Utah. You know, he's a cocky guy, no question about that. He rubs some people the wrong way. Look, there's a reason. He was at Mississippi State for – well, let me just say, first of all, I think he's a great coach. I've always had him ranked high in those coaching rankings. He – I mean, Mississippi – he had a Mississippi State team that won 10 games and went to a New Year's Six Bowl. He turned Dak Prescott into an NFL quarterback, an NFL standout quarterback at least at times. And but he was in Starkville for 9 seasons. Nobody voluntarily stays in Mississippi State for 9 seasons. Clearly, he always had his eye on a quote-unquote bigger job, and he didn't get it.
Right. He interviewed,
and even Florida.
He interviewed for the Miami job 2 different times. I remember one of the times they were like, he did not come across well at all in the interview. And it, you know, when, and there was also, it was one of those where the coach who doesn't get the job was like, well, I wasn't really interested in it. And that's like you hear from people actually.
And there was a lot of that.
Yeah, that's not quite how it went down.
I mean, Jeremy Foley, when he was still at Florida, had several coaching searches, it feels like. And he certainly knew Dan Mullen from when he was with Urban and didn't want to hire him. And so when he finally does get that job, it's because his former AD at Mississippi State is now at Florida. And even then, I mean, Florida went tried to get I don't remember which order this went in, but
well,
they tried to get Chip Kelly,
yeah.
And they tried to get Scott Frost. So all of which is saying a way of saying that if you were going just by, you know, play calling and quarterback development, you would have thought he would have gotten that call a long time ago. I think his personality just rubs people the wrong way. And so now, all that being said, I mean, I remember another Florida coach many, many years ago who embraced the role of the villain in the SEC, Steve Spurrier. So I'm not saying this is the worst thing in the world for him to be doing. Although I certainly didn't condone those comments about minimizing COVID and or what he did last night. But, you know, Alan Taylor, our Florida writer, had a great column from the game. He's like, you know, that fine, whatever they're going to fine him is worth it, because he probably won over his players in a big, big way by going to bat for them. Now, some of those players are probably going to be suspended for the Georgia game, because the SEC can go in, watch the tape, find the guys that didn't get ejected at the time and suspend them for the next game. Not ideal going into a game where it's kind of a loser goes home game, right? I mean, they both have a loss already. One of these two teams is going to play in the SEC title game, we assume against Alabama, and with a shot at a playoff berth. So, but probably not the team that loses this game. So it's a big, big game. In Jacksonville.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And look, and Stu, we can talk more, a little bit more about our thoughts on the actual Florida-Georgia matchup in our second episode later this week. I did watch a lot of the LSU-Auburn game, at least the first half, and LSU looked awful in the game. Now, I don't want to take anything away from Auburn, but a couple of things were big takeaways right away. So TJ Finley, the true freshman quarterback who looked really good against South Carolina, looked just overwhelmed. And it looked like, to me, somebody who's like, hey, you know, I lit up South Carolina. This SEC football, not that hard. You know, it just kind of like, I think it was a big difference. Once he had a near pick six and then a fumble that was a scoop and score, the dam broke, because then the defense, which hadn't been that bad, looked like awful again. And like, Bo Pelini has no answers right now. And that was as bad as LSU's looked probably since 2017, when they got blown out by that Dan Mullen team at Mississippi State. And I think, to me, and just having obviously followed and know inside LSU pretty well now, this team feels very similar to what it looked like in 2017, except there's even less experience on it, and there's really no more cupcakes around it where you're going to get maybe some, you know, a mediocre Syracuse team mixed in. You're just getting, you know, now Arkansas doesn't stink and Ole Miss is respectable. So looking at their schedule, they would be fortunate to go 4-6 at this point.
Yeah, I think you're being a little generous to even put them in the same breath as the 2017 team. What did they go, 9-4?
Yeah, but Stu, they got beat in Starkville as bad as this game. I mean, they got beat by 30 and it was really ugly. And then they lost to Troy, and the Troy loss, there was nothing fluky about it. I mean, I'm not saying this team is that good. I think what's different, though, is, you know, the parallels are, you had a new coordinator hire on one side of the ball that is not working out. That's what it was with Matt Canada on offense. And in this case, that's what it was with Bo Pelini on defense. And I think what's different now is, now all of a sudden you're playing true freshman quarterbacks on top of it. So it's not like, you know, at least that side of it, the defense wasn't great, but it in 2017, at least it could kind of hold up a little bit compared to an offense that was really struggling to find its way. Now the defense is terrible, and the offense, which is now being run by true freshman quarterbacks, it's just a really, really it's a major rebuild right now. And that's, I mean, obviously we know almost all the starters, with the exception of Terrace Marshall from last year, pretty much are in the NFL, but it's just, it's a completely different team than it was in 2019.
This team is terrible. And LSU, it's been a long time since LSU had a terrible football team. I was just looking back, and the last time LSU even won fewer than 8 games in a season was 1999, when they went 3-8 in Jerry DiNardo's last season, the year before Saban came in. If this team, now this team is playing a 10-game conference-only schedule, so it's going to throw things off a little bit. But sure, even if they were playing a regular schedule, I think they would be fortunate to get to 500. I think we all talked ourselves into, we knew they'd take a step back. I think we talked ourselves into it wouldn't be that big a step back, just because it doesn't seem possible that a team could win the national championship and be this bad the next year. But, you know, you look back now, they basically had to start from scratch. You know, as great as that team was, almost everybody was gone. And I think most, you know, as significantly, or almost as significantly as losing Joe Burrow, was losing Joe Brady, who was a big part of that, obviously. Mm-hmm. And losing Dave Aranda, who Ogeron kind of threw under the bus on the way out of town, but he was still, you know, one of the top defensive coordinators in college football for many years. And he could have brought in anyone, his choice, you know, write the check, whoever would come in next. He picked Bo Pelini, and I mean, that is just failing spectacularly.
It is. So, and I think one of the things here, and this is just, I think he was not going to stay with a three-man front on defense. And I think he's more comfortable, and he learned under Jimmy Johnson. He won with Pete Carroll. That is a different defense. Pete Carroll and Bo Pelini come from the same tree. I think in that regard, I think he was like, this seems like the direction I want to go. Well, the communication's been really bad from the sideline to the players, and the players are not picking up the defense. And I don't know what kind of adjustments are being made on that, but they just look like they are really confused and really, really out of position. And it just seems like a lot of times where it can be third and seven or third and eight, and it happened, you know, it's happened a lot this year, but I noticed it particularly yesterday. Bo Nix has an easy throw where the nickelback is like 5 yards away from the receiver. And it's just like, man, it should not be that easy for them. And I actually think one of the things that they're struggling with is they had a pretty good game against South Carolina. And remember, South Carolina had beat Auburn. You know, did the guys watch this film? Because South Carolina beat them also at the line of scrimmage. And did they watch that and think for some reason it was going to be easier than it was? I don't know. But it was a really bad performance by a team that right now cannot get out of its own way. And I think they're going to struggle to get to 4-6 because, you know, they have a bye week and then they have Alabama. To think they're not going to lose that game by 5 touchdowns the way they're playing now is a stretch.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Think about what Alabama's going to do to that defense. I mean, they gave up 623 passing yards to Mississippi State, who can barely complete a forward pass now. I mean, what is Mac Jones and Najee, like that offense, which they put up a graphic toward the end of the Alabama-Mississippi State game yesterday. Like, statistically, Alabama's offense this year is like almost identical to LSU's last year. I don't even, and it's a revenge game for Alabama. It could get super ugly. So I do want to give some credit to Auburn. I think they are getting better. Tank Bigsby is a star. Bo Nix struggled early in the season. He obviously played a lot better in that game. And you know, their defense made some big plays, like you said, early in the game. So I think they're surging. You know, another team that's been playing pretty well is Texas A&M. Which, it's interesting, I actually saw people say, well, maybe they're the second best team in the SEC, which, if that's the case, is not doesn't speak well of the SEC, because they have already played Alabama and lost 52-24. I'm not saying you can't get better over the course of the season, but the gap seemed pretty wide that day, and now, you know, look, they beat Florida. Florida and Georgia will play this week, and if Florida wins, certainly puts them on course for the SEC championship. So, I mean, Jimbo Fisher's team is making progress as well. I just think the gap between Alabama and the rest of the SEC, it's not the gap between Ohio State and the rest of the Big Ten, but there's a gap there.
Yeah, I mean, look, I feel like and we can get to this in a second, I feel like Georgia and Texas A&M, especially Kellen Mond's playing well. They're good on, I feel like they're good on both lines right now. They're playing with a lot more confidence. I feel like they're closer to legit top 10 teams. So as we pivot to, and we'll get into the Michigan State game in a second, but I wanted to ask you, because I don't think this team has gotten enough credit and this coach is vastly underrated, and that's Tom Allen. I mean, right now, the way Michael Penix especially looked in the second half, especially against the way he won that game against Penn State, but also was really sharp yesterday against Rutgers. And again, people will roll their eyes, Rutgers, well, Rutgers did beat Michigan State or whatever. And it's, I think you can make a case right now that Indiana is the second best team in the Big Ten. Do you buy that at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because where do you throw Wisconsin in there? They've only played one game. I don't know when we're going to see them next. I believe they're the second highest ranked team. But let's just say I think Indiana probably is the second best team in the Big Ten East, which, you know, who would have ever thought that coming into this season? But Penn State, I thought Penn State actually played better.
You're even qualifying by the Big Ten East. Who do you think is better than them in the West?
I'm saying it's quite possible Wisconsin is better than them, but we just don't know.
Wisconsin, even if they play this week against Purdue, they're going to be playing with their four-string quarterback. And they may be playing with the four-string quarterback in the middle of the month as well.
Right.
So, again, I'm not...
I'm saying that that's just welcome to college football in 2020. I don't even know how you... First of all, I don't see how they're going to play this week. They've got 22 positives as of Saturday.
They have 23. They have 13 players who right now would be out. That's according to our reporting. Plus, obviously, 10 staffers. Now, some of those staffers could be back in time for the game, but obviously they don't play in the game. So you're down 13 players. But look, Illinois was down a whole bunch of players, including their top two quarterbacks. They played, and they actually were competitive with Purdue yesterday.
Well, I guess the question with Wisconsin is, can they get in enough practice? Because they took a 7-day break, right? So they're not going to be able to return to practice till Wednesday before a Saturday game.
Yeah, that is, again, and it's just like they've only played one game. So it's not like a football program that's had a lot of routine anyway. And there's a week off, or maybe it's, horrific weather that has, happened or something that has caused this break. I mean, that's a significant issue, I think, that they would be dealing with.
All right, throw Wisconsin out then. I guess then it would come down to what? Indiana versus Northwestern for second best team?
Purdue.
I thought Penn State on offense played better against Ohio State than they did against
It's because
Indiana.
Jahan Dotson showed up and looked like an NFL All-Pro at times. I actually, because they didn't have a running game, what to speak of.
True, and they probably won't for quite a while. They're 0-2 already. They're out. And your Michigan Wolverines, I believe.
They're my Michigan Wolverines?
Your guy, Josh Gattis, we've been waiting for the big breakout. We thought we had it in week one. And then, I don't know about you, but I watched Minnesota-Maryland Friday night. We talk about LSU's awful defense. Minnesota's right there with them. And I remember thinking, uh-oh, we might have overreacted to that Joe Milton show against the Gophers. And sure enough, Michigan State had all the answers for them.
I actually think, Stu, to me, the bigger issue with Michigan, it really, though, is the secondary is awful.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think, again, Michigan State had a freshman receiver have one catch for 6 yards against Rutgers, and then he turned into Jerry Rice against Michigan. And I'm watching the game. Charles Woodson is working with us yesterday. I mean, he's the greatest defensive back in the history of the Big Ten. And I thought he was going to vomit on his ascot watching this. He was so,
Oh, he must have been horrified.
He was mortified because I think, on one hand, it's like I'm listening to him and Reggie Bush talk about something. I'm like, okay, first of all, I'm not... And again, technique aside, but I'm thinking you don't need to, the threshold of his athleticism or their athleticism is obviously different than everybody else playing the game right now anyway, but just they don't, right now, they're secondary. And it's been a while for this, I feel like, where, Don Brown has a tremendous resume and has coached a lot of great football. But there's something missing with their secondary at this point. I mean, because we see it get exposed against Ohio State every year. And we saw it get exposed by Rocky Lombardi and some really young receivers by Michigan State. And so I guess the thing and the one carryover between Michigan State, certainly, and Ohio State is we see it get exposed a lot in big games. We see it get exposed a lot in bowl games. And I don't quite... I wonder what the disconnect is. I know they didn't have Ambry Thomas, who opted out, and they've lost some guys, really good players. But still, I mean, they're at Michigan. I was just like, I don't understand why they're not better on that side of the ball. And it's happened a lot.
You just said a phrase in there that I think... they're at Michigan. The answer to what you're talking about is recruiting. It's gotten worse, not better, under Harbaugh. And, I think for a program that strives to be Ohio State and compete with Ohio State, there's no better illustration of that gap than the fact that Ohio State every year, right, almost every year, has a first-round cornerback, it seems like. This year it might be Sean Wade. And that guy goes to the NFL, and they plug in the next guy, and he goes on to be a first-round cornerback. Michigan lost both starting cornerbacks from last year. LaVert Hill went undrafted. Ambry Thomas, I have no idea what his stock will be. He opted out before the season. And there aren't guys waiting in the wings, right? It's not like plug in the next great recruit.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think they were unprepared yesterday. I mean, I saw a quote from one of the players who flat out said their whole game plan assumed Michigan State was just going to run the ball on them. But yeah, I mean, that's the difference between the elite programs and next tier or a couple tiers down, is that when you lose a bunch of guys at a position, it takes a while to get the next wave ready.
Yeah, the only thing with that, though, is like Daxton Hill was as big a recruit as a DB as anybody signed in the Big Ten probably in the last 5 years. He's a top 15 overall player. I mean, he's there. They have guys. I mean, Jalen Perry was a big, big recruit. It's not like they're all, I mean, compare their recruits to what Mark D'Antonio was having in the secondary, you know, when he was at Michigan State and they had really good defenses. The star rankings was a lot higher for those Michigan guys. I mean, Miles Sims is a long corner. He was a big recruit. Like they have guys who were big recruits back there. It's not like, if you look in the secondary, again, look at Dax Hill. He is a big, big time recruit. It's not like they haven't had guys who people wanted. I mean, I think that is an oversimplification to me.
Well, Dax Hill, I'm looking him up now just to refresh. Yeah, 5-star guy.
What was he ranked in the top 20, right?
But it was just last year, right? So, yeah, some you know, Derek Stingley is ready to go in day one. Not every big-time recruit is ready to go in day one.
Ambry Thomas was a top 100 player, top 100 recruit. He opted out. I mean, it's not... You know, they've had guys that people wanted back there. If you look in their...
So then the question is, what's going wrong with the development?
Yes, I think that is probably a more apt question.
Yeah. I saw some people went with the Harbaugh, you know, hot takes yesterday. I didn't feel the need to roll one of those out. I think my opinion on him has been pretty clear for a while. I think the interesting wrinkle there is that, you know, in the past, I don't know, a couple years, when things started to go south, people would be like, oh, are they going to fire him? Is he on the hot seat? And you'd be like, no, they're wed to him. But the interesting twist that actually our friend Pete Thamel has written about quite a bit at Yahoo.
Every week, it seems.
He's still on his original contract. They never extended it. And he's down to his last 2 years. At this point, do you see Harbaugh still being the Michigan coach after 2021?
Who are they going to, like... If somebody thinks they're not going to renew him, who are they going to bring in if you're a Michigan fan, go, okay, that's the guy who's going to elevate our program? I mean, like, there's got to be... Fire the coach is one thing. There's got to be answers to this.
I have an answer. It's going to be a bit controversial.
You're going to get Mike Tomlin to leave the Steelers to go coach Michigan.
When Bo Schembechler came to Michigan, right, why was it a little bit controversial?
Because he came from the Woody Hayes tree.
Well, there's another guy from the Ohio State tree who is whose stock is going to be extremely high by the end of this season, if Michigan would be willing to take a Buckeye, and if that Buckeye would be willing to be the coach of Michigan.
Luke Fickell?
Correct.
I wonder if Luke Fickell would really want that job.
I feel like he might be loyal enough to the Buckeyes that he would say no, but I mean, he's having himself. He has a great team. I mean, they just destroy. They, especially on defense, they played SMU, high powered offense, then Memphis, another high powered offense, and held them to 10 points. Memphis, 13 points. 13, SMU. Yep. They're really good. He's really good, and so now in a normal non-pandemic year, right, there would be a bidding war for Luke Fickell at the end of the season. I don't know how many schools are even going to be on the market. And I don't know that Michigan will be yet.
I had heard there was basically, because Michigan State kicked the tires with Fickell. And I had heard really there was three schools that would be in even him considering. And Ohio State, which obviously as long as Ryan Day is there, they're not needing a new coach. Notre Dame, Brian Kelly keeps winning. They're not needing anything. And then maybe Penn State. And obviously, you know, even though they're off to a bad start, it's not like they're going to get rid of James Franklin after going 0-2.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it may be the rare situation. I mean, you remember Brian Kelly had the dream season at Cincinnati and went right to Notre Dame. It may be the rare situation where Cincinnati, let's say they play in a New Year's Six Bowl. I know there's going to be talk about playoff if they go undefeated. Not ready to go there yet.
Let me play devil's advocate for you on this.
They may actually be able to keep him for another
year. Let me ask you this, because I want to go devil's advocate. Because, you know, and I think they've had a terrific season. They look really good. But Jim Harbaugh did a remarkable job at Stanford. At Michigan,
That was 10 years ago.
I know, but it's not like it didn't happen. All I'm saying to this, Jim Harbaugh's record in the Big Ten is 33-13. It's really bad, though, against the two schools that matter the most, Ohio State and then Michigan State. The point on Luke Fickell, though, is when you look at his record, I mean, there's a big jump to go from an AAC to the expectation that you're gonna all of a sudden have a top five playoff caliber team, because that's what you're really saying you have to have. Because as underwhelming and disappointing as Jim Harbaugh's regime has been, he's had four top 20 finishes in five seasons there, and you know, 12th, 10th, 14th, 18th. It's not like it's been a disaster. It's been really disappointing because the expectations are really high. And I'm not disagreeing. I'm saying it. It's been really disappointing, especially how they do in the big games. But it's a leap to think that Luke Fickell is going to go from the AAC and do significantly better than Jim Harbaugh. I mean, this isn't like, to me, this isn't Chris Peterson winning at Washington and then thinking, how's that going to translate? This is a projection right now. It really is. Now, maybe he's the guy, and maybe the comparison you said is Cincinnati, Brian Kelly has done really well at Notre Dame. And that, you know what? That's a legitimate point. But also, and look, in fairness to Luke Fickell, he took over from Tommy Tuberville, who sucked the life out of that program. You know, they were crap when he took over, and he really has done a terrific job there. I'm just saying, you know, if you want to look and say, hey, Luke Fickell, he could be the guy, or I really love what I've seen from Jeff Hafley in year one, maybe that's the next guy, because obviously he knows the Big Ten from his albeit brief time in Ohio State. But again, whoever you get who you think would do better than Jim Harbaugh is going to be a big leap of faith to go in there, because they just, you know, it's just a big jump from where they are to the expectation to do better than Jim Harbaugh's done.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Yeah, most coaching hires are a gamble. I mean, it's impossible to say for sure on anybody whether it's going to work out. I think when Ohio State hired Urban Meyer, you could check that one off. When Alabama hired Nick Saban, you could check that one off. Actually, I thought when Michigan hired Harbaugh, it would be one of those. It was a perfect fit kind of thing, and certainly, like you said, I mean, we had just seen him in the, you know, 4 or 5 years leading up to that do a remarkable turnaround at Stanford and take the 49ers to the Super Bowl. It's just a matter of, like, you know, you kept using the word disappointment. what level of, how long are you, are is that fan base willing to just go along with disappointment?
Well, here's the
if
thing.
If this were the SEC, that there would be no, you know, they, the boosters would have already raised the buyout by now. It's not, that's not the culture in most of the Big Ten. And certainly in this year, I mean, they're going to play a 9-game season. It, you know, the president of that school, who I believe we all know was, is not a sports fan, and frankly was apathetic about them even playing football this year. It doesn't seem like the type of guy who's going to be like, we got to get rid of the football coach. So I don't think, I'm not expecting there to be any urgency on that matter, but at some point, you know, I mean, maybe it'll be Harbaugh. Maybe it'll be Harbaugh who says, you know what, I'm not doing a good job in my alma mater. I should hand it off to somebody else. Who knows? It's just hard to see this going on in perpetuity, they're just going to resign themselves to, we're going to lose a few games every year. We're going to get our butts kicked by Ohio State and be fine as long as we finish, you know, in the top 20.
The curious thing to me is if you look at the first 2 years of Jim Harbaugh, the first year he did way better than I think anybody expected, right? He wins 10 games. Right. Year two, he also wins 10 games. They have that
Year two, they were right there.
Yeah, and they lose to Ohio State in overtime. You're like, okay. They finished 10th in the country in year two. And, you know, again, winning 10 games, nobody thought he was going to win 10 games his first year. But then after that, it has been, you know, three disappointing years in a row. And now, certainly, to lose to that Michigan State team, and credit to Mel Tucker, because that was a hell of a bounce back and a, you know, by his team, and to play as well as they did. There were three touchdown underdogs. I mean, I don't know. Michigan's going to have to get a whole lot better for people to, you know, it's with them, it's been weird because there's been some good mixed in and a lot of disappointment, right? They smashed Notre Dame last year, but then they, you know, I think he's lost his last four bowl games. It's just, I think at this point, whatever benefit of the doubt you have, if you're a Michigan fan, is all gone. Just because you're like, this, just for whatever reason, just isn't working out. And I'm not saying, like, if you ask me, do you think, and I'll ask you this now, just if you had to guess, because this is all we're doing, you think Jim Harbaugh will ever beat Ohio State in a game?
Well, I guess that depends on how long ever is going to be, right?
No, just saying. Just simple
I don't
question.
Think he will beat Ohio State in the next before his current contract is over. I mean, this year's game, Ryan Day might be able to just pick his score. Nothing's certainty in 2020. I just said that, and then I remembered, like,
yeah, I mean,
what if Justin Fields has his Trevor Lawrence moment the week of the game? I don't know. So I don't want to – I'm going to take back that bold proclamation. But full strength Ohio State, you know, I don't think would be a contest. Remember that Big Ten coaches call in the offseason, right? What did Ryan Day say afterward, reportedly?
I don't even remember, Stu.
Harbaugh accused them of cheating, and he told his team, we're going to hang 100 on them.
Well, go do it. I'm sure people will watch. So –
Trevor, we made it 34 minutes into the podcast without mentioning that the biggest star in college football tested positive for COVID last week and is going to miss the biggest game of the season. Buried the lead a little bit there. As you're watching Clemson fall behind 28-10 against the mighty BC, Joe Tessitore's mighty BC Eagles, and what a moment when he got to call his son's fake field goal, drawing them off sides. Did it make you worried about Clemson heading into the Notre Dame game?
I don't know if worried is the right way. It made me a little skeptical. Look, we'll see if they get... They were down two really good defensive players. Tyler Davis, their best defensive lineman. James Skalski, who's a leader on the defense. And they... You know, they look like they were just kind of finding their way a little bit. You can't look at their offense. I mean, G.J. Uiagalelei played really well. You know, he had 350 passing yards, ran for a touchdown. I mean, that part looked good. Travis Etienne, as long as he's there, I think they're really dangerous. But, you know, it just, you know, Djurkovic looked very, very solid early on. And I think that this isn't a BC team with a lot of firepower. So you know, my feeling is Notre Dame's a better version of what they're going to see, what they saw from BC. But keep in mind, Stu, that really all the stuff with the Trevor Lawrence is not going to play, and just I think a lot of the uncertainty with the team. I think now they're going to have a full week to prepare coming off the game, and I feel like they'll be in much better shape, maybe emotionally, to handle this, because Dabo Swinney already declared Trevor Lawrence out for this week's game, so I don't think that's hanging over the program as much. I think they go handle their business. I'm very curious to see how Notre Dame does. I have been kind of lukewarm to buy in. Like, they may be the number four team in the country, but it feels to me like there's a big drop between Clemson, at least full strength Clemson, which they're obviously not going to get, but they're still going to get a good Clemson, and certainly Alabama and Ohio State. So where are you on how competitive you think this game will be, and if you were a odds maker, what would you set the spread on this game?
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you. I mean, I don't think Notre Dame is necessarily overrated. It's just that somebody has to be number four, and there are three teams that I think are a couple rungs, if not more, above number four, above the fourth best team. Kind of like last season, actually, once we got to the end of the season. This Notre Dame team has a great defense and a great running game. But I think to beat a team like Clemson, you need to be great in every aspect. And I don't think they have... I think they're too one-dimensional on offense. They don't have much of a vertical. They don't really have receivers that can scare you like certainly Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State have. You know, look, I agree with you. I think that to me, it's crazy to say this, right? Trevor Lawrence is going to be the number one pick in the draft, and I'm less worried about the fact he won't be there than I am about those defensive players because of what I just said. Notre Dame has a great offensive line, and they would love to run it right down the middle of Clemson's defense if they're missing, you know, some of their best interior players on defense. But I think they're going to get at least a couple of them back. Dabo was kind of vague about that, but I think that's what we're thinking. And so, you know, okay, to answer your question about what the line should be, like, I think it was going to be Clemson by two touchdowns. Now it should probably be more like 10.5.
That's still pretty big spread.
John would know this better than us. Does that sound right?
I'd say so. Yeah, that'd be right around my number, within three.
Yeah. And so I just want to put it on record now that if Notre Dame does lose by double digits, and I don't know if they will, they've had a lot of these games, the Georgia game a couple years ago, the going back to Florida State with Jameis, where they almost pulled it off. But if they do lose by double digits to Clemson without Trevor Lawrence, we're going to get the same exact round that we always do of what a fraud Notre Dame is, and they're overrated every year. And I don't think that will necessarily be the case. I just think that somebody has to be ranked number four.
Yeah, I think really more a case of I don't think Notre Dame, you could say Notre Dame is overranked. I think there's probably people who are maybe skeptical that they may be overrated. And I think there's a little bit of a distinction to be made. Maybe that's splitting hairs semantically, but very interested to see what Notre Dame does this weekend. I'm fascinated to see how they handle it. I think they're a really good, solid team. I think if, again, and this is unfair to say this because it's not their fault Trevor Lawrence isn't going to play, but I think this gives you a good barometer of like, could they actually do damage in a playoff? Not just are they deserving of the fourth spot? And that ultimately, I think, is an open-ended question.
And the interesting thing is, it's quite it seems kind of likely at this point that those two are going to play again. And it sets up the scenario where, you know, that even if Notre Dame loses, they might still have a chance to beat them again later. So it's I know that Alabama Georgia was a big game a couple weeks ago. I think it was number 2 versus number 3. This one is more intriguing to me because, first of all, the Trevor Lawrence situation, but also, like, if you remember, that was that, I know, I can't believe, first of all, that game was only 2 weeks ago. It seems like 2 months ago. That was before the Big Ten came back. That was when we were still in that weird mode of, like, the season doesn't truly feel like it's started yet. You know, we're here now. It's going to be early November. Night game, South Bend. I'm excited for it. As always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. One of our regulars, Daniel Klobuchar. Hey, Bruce and Stu, Congrats on the new book. I actually bought two, an extra for my LSU grad cousin, which I paid for with the money I'd been saving for Stu's much anticipated follow-up to his last book, which was 13 years ago, but thank you very much, Dan. After an 11-win season, Minnesota seemingly jumped to the status of a perennial top 15 to 20 team, became a favorite to many writers to win the Big Ten West, and had a coach that shot up the coaching rankings. A deeper dive shows that the Gophers barely scraped by three unimpressive non-conference opponents, ran off a streak of facing first-time or backup starting quarterbacks as 1-2 against the upper echelon of the Big Ten. Can their slow start this season be attributable to 2020 and COVID-19, or was 2019 an anomaly of a season for a program that has been mediocre for much of the last 30 years?
It's a good question, especially after watching them the first 2 weeks look very, very mediocre. You know, I had a weird window on them last season because I'd seen them in the opener against South Dakota State, where they were lucky to win. I mean, they were trailing, and you came away thinking there wasn't a big gap between those two teams. And then we had them at Iowa, where they lost. Tanner Morgan had a terrific season. Obviously, they had really good receivers. I think it's really hurt them to lose Antoine Winfield Jr. especially. So I don't know. I mean, I think a little bit like James Franklin, when PJ Fleck loses, especially when he loses bad, and then losing to Maryland is bad, and getting blown out at home by Michigan on national TV is certainly bad. I feel like people come out and crow about it. You know, similar to James Franklin, I feel like PJ Fleck just rubs a lot of people the wrong way. I know he rubs, you know, more than his share of coaches seem to be rub them the wrong way as well. So I think that adds to it. I still think they're a pretty good team, but they've got to get a lot better on defense, and they have a lot of guys replaced. As I mentioned, losing Winfield really hurts, and this could be a really long season because it's looking like it already is for them.
I think when you're a program that's not, that hasn't been at this level in a while and has a season like last year, it would, you know, it hurt them to lose so many, like Winfield, like so many of those key guys on defense, because they're just not, you know, PJ Fleck probably doesn't have a reservoir of great players waiting just yet to replace those guys. You know, they're fortunate that they did get back Rashad Bateman, and they do have a great running back, and they can score points, but that defense is probably going to struggle most of the year. This one from Andrew. Hey, guys. While no one knows for sure today if any Pac-12 or Big Ten schools would be potential playoff candidates given their late start to the season, doesn't the unfortunate disruption of games in the other conferences, most recently this weekend's Wisconsin-Nebraska game, strengthen the argument that at least one Pac-12 school should receive strong consideration if it produces an undefeated team? The interesting thing about the Wisconsin situation to me that's quite ominous for the Pac-12 is that this was never supposed to happen, right? Both of those conferences were like, we've got daily rapid response tests, so if somebody tests positive, they'll be isolated so quickly there'll never be an outbreak. And Wisconsin, something went haywire there. We know those tests aren't as accurate as PCR tests, but man, like, for it to spread to 22 guys in the matter of 23 guys in the matter of a few days, something went wrong there. So if you're the Pac-12, you got to hope that either your tests are way more accurate than the ones the Big Ten are using, or you could have some teams that, you know, they're only going to be able to play seven games in a best case. What if they only end up playing five or six games? No, I don't think that team would have a shot at the playoff.
I would agree. I just think the numbers just don't bode well for them. And obviously it's uncharted where we're headed with all this, but certainly too small of a sample size. And I think that's just one of the sad realities we have of 2020 right now.
I mean, if we assume that Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State are going to be three of them, and it's a battle for the fourth spot, I don't even know how you're going to justify, let's say Oregon goes 7-0. How are you going to justify that over Cincinnati if they're 11-0? I know that the playoff has been dismissive of Group of Five to this point, but you know, there's not a, you know, if the Big 12 keeps cannibalizing itself, like, there might not be a better option for the fourth spot.
With you. It's going to be a lot of debate about it.
All right. As always, send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. What a great week we're about to have. BYU, Boise State Friday night. Pac-12 before brunch Sunday morning. Pac-12 will be back. Maction is back this week. and Georgia, Florida, and Clemson, Notre Dame. We'll see you next time. With the things we used to do.